many messages, messages from outer space. As many of our listeners know, this has been a big discussion on UFO programs, forums, and websites for a couple of weeks now. Wes Bateman has been our man for the latest when it comes to finding out about messages from outer space. We've worked with Wes for a couple of years now on this. In fact, we have a PDF file right here on this page of this website by Wes entitled The Tau Ceti Con Game. I recommend you, the listener, take time to read it. It's very interesting. On the line from Arizona right now, well, he's barely in Arizona, just across the border from Nevada, out in the middle of the Mojave Desert, we have Wes Bateman. And welcome to the show.
I'm just fine.
We also have Rod Davis on the line from Las Vegas. Rod's website is rodcdavis.com. So I guess I should call you RC, Rod?
Well, just don't get me mixed up with the cola.
That's right.
Okay, let's get right to this, guys. Both of you have been living with this project for years, Messages from Outer Space, the SETI case. And as usual, when we talk about these things in ufology, for the last couple of weeks, we've had conflicting reports. Some people say, who should know? Yeah, we're having messages. We're receiving messages from outer space. Others in the SETI organization are saying, no way, Jose. So I thought we would probably just get you both on the line here, and let's make an effort to clear this up.
We can help out there for sure. Well, somebody is right. In 1997, I got an email from my niece, Cynthia Atkinson, and said, Uncle Wes, take a look at the messages that are supposed to be fictitious. But I found them by following a link on the official homepage of the SETI Institute. Well, I printed them out as she sent them to me, and they laid on my desk for days. And eventually I did follow up and verify that there was a link from the SETI Institute to a group called the Contact Project. Now the fellow that was that set up this website for the Contact Project said that he made up 9 fictitious extraterrestrial messages, and he did so as an experiment, posted them on the internet with the idea to have the general public look at them and try to decipher these messages, therefore to learn ways that we might interpret real extraterrestrial messages in the future, if we ever got any. Well, I wasn't up to playing a game or anything like that, but the messages were laying there. And I happened to look at the first page or two, and I noticed that they said that that the first two messages amounted to 37 tones, and this fellow said that the messages, that there were actually 82 tones that were separated by a particular frequency. In other words, they got higher and higher in pitch as per this frequency. Well, I have spent 40 years studying the Great Pyramid of Giza, and during that time, I isolated that the natural system of mathematics that was obviously used to construct the Great Pyramid. We also found that the system was used at other ancient sites, such as Teotihuacan, Mexico, Stonehenge, and so forth. So we knew definitely that these places were not laid out by primitives. They actually, whoever these people that laid out these ancient sites were definitely of high intelligence, because the Ra system, which is what we called it after the ancient Egyptian sun god, Amun-Ra, expresses certain things such as the wavelengths of the spectral lines of hydrogen in the Great Pyramid of Giza and so forth. Now, it's very difficult to find, believe that somebody who lives in, between 2400 and 2700 BC had that kind of knowledge. So, anyway, back to the so-called messengers. There is, in this system, there is a table of numbers which is called the Ra table of nine. They are 27, 54, 81. They're all multiples of the number 27. Now, so looking at these headings of these messages, so-called victor messages, it says there are 37 tones were used in the first two messages. So I decided that I would assign each one of these tones a number from the Ra table of nine. That is the tone that they had symbolized as capital A. I said 27, capital B, 54. Now, the next thing you have to know is that this fellow divine, divine. It has to be, believe me, if you know what we're getting out of these messages. He said that each tone lasted about 0.492 seconds. So I said, okay, the first message, if you would look at it written there, would be G, D, G, all capitals. Well, we found that the G's are neutral. In fact, G is the seventh letter in the alphabet, and we found that the G would therefore be compared to the seventh period in the periodic table of elements. So anyway, I took so the first section of the first message is G, B, G. So 54 is the only active value. So you divide 54 by 0.492. The answer was astonishing, because what you get is a number that's very close to a number well known in physics by any person that a high school physics student would probably know this number. And it's called the Rydberg constant for infinite mass. Well, that was exciting, you know. Amazing how this guy could invent the nine fictitious messages, you know, and use the Rydberg constant that way. Well, it took, of course, when I saw that, I said, no, no, somebody is pulling our leg here. And I went further and started applying the knowledge that we have from the pyramid. And lo and behold, we found that there were two systems, two units and time units. And so we started applying it. The second time unit is it's a 0.493827167. And the next thing we would see, these discoveries came hard and long. So eventually we found that each tone had three values. For instance, A, 27, 9, and 3. B, 54, 18, and 6. T, 18, 27, and 9. So we took, now this is where it gets exciting. Now if you, anybody can tell me that this is a game, you know, I hang up my hat because I don't want to live in a world with so many stupid people. Okay. So what I did is then say, okay, level one, which would be 6, divided by our 0.49382710160, gives us an answer of 12.15. Well, they had to be most intense, the wavelength, at the most intense spectral light of the element hydrogen in the Ross system is 12.15. It's an ultraviolet line, and it's also, as I say, the most intense line produced by the element. Now we take the second level, and we call DAP, and divide it into, well, I also put that time unit. Now we get 36.45. Written as 364.5, this value is another constant used in equations to mathematically determine the visible spectral light to hydrogen. It's called the Balmer constant. Okay, that's 54 divided by that time unit. This is 109.35. If you write that as 1093.5, millimicrons, it's the value of the wavelength of the passive spectral light, which is in the infrared range of the spectrum. Now, does this sound like a game? Of course not. So, we found here that we are working with something that is real messages received by somebody. Now let's look at this. Now just go to the second book. Stop all this number stuff. I'm trying to. We go to the second section of the first message, which would read GVP3. Well, let's just say that the third level is 54 times 54. That gives us an answer of 2,916 square units. Now, that's another number hit me right in the head. 291.0 are 2,960 cubic centimeters in the ancient Egyptian unit of measure called the Artaba. That's A-R-T-A-B-A. This could be verified on the internet. Go to Google, punch in Artaba. It's going to give you that value. Now here we had these, know for definitely sure that these messages are written on the order of this mathematical system that I rediscovered back in 1975. And here we have the ancient Egyptian Artaba tied in with the messages. Okay, now, one more thing. The Barbary Castle Drop Formation of July 1991 in England. The outer circles, there are three outer circles, and the radius of the outer circles is 41.00625 Ross feet. Now, if you look at that as millimicrons, as 410.0625 millimicrons, this is the Balmer M6 spectral line of hydrogen. Now, we have also found, therefore, the same system is being used to lay out those crop circles which the extraterrestrials are responsible for. Now, before I said that each cone was separated, according to Levine, they were separated by 12.1965 hertz. In other words, A was a certain frequency, and the next one was a multiple of that one. Well, dear friend, if you take the raw value for that frequency that each of these tones are, and you find it reciprocal, that is, divide that frequency into one, you get the amount of energy that would be produced if you converted the mass of an electron into energy by way of the equation E equals mc squared. So, no doubt, this is not the magic Harry Gates. Now, let's go back. Okay, that's enough of that. I could go on forever. We've got thousands of cases. Now, let's understand that if these were received on 1420 megahertz, a lot of people could have hit the button. Most ham operators can think of 1420, which is the basic hydrogen frequency. That's why the government forbids anybody transmitting on that frequency, because it is a hope of people such as SETI that if any messages are ever received from the extraterrestrial source, they're going to be on that frequency, okay? But, you know, I've heard Art Bell say that he could listen down for 1420 megahertz. So, the thing about this is that we are sure that Levine did not make up these messages. He said there were maybe two tones used. No, there wasn't. There was maybe one tone used. That means we have nine messages and 81 tones. Now, 81 is 9 times 9. So, a message is a message there, you know, that we're using a system based on 9, and the ROM system is definitely that. Somebody got these messages. We linked to this guy by way of the SETI homepage. For instance, and I know that Rod could give you his rundown on our experiences with the National Institute for Discovery Science.
Yeah, I want Rod to get in here on the conversation too, Rod.
Okay. So, the thing here is they hired codebreakers to try to do this, and there were two retired codebreakers, and they threw up their hands. They couldn't do it. And they're so convinced that, in other words, their BS, the subject, that they believe the other guy's BS, so that they would never have looked for the system to interpret these messages that come out of the geometry of the Great Pyramid of Giza. And that they believe the other guys when they say, oh, no, this was built by ancient Egyptians, you know. But they never would have looked there. And the other thing is that SETI don't want these to be real. First of all, the reason they don't is because they did not receive them, they could not bring these to the world. Now, Dr. Beard is right that they're being SETI being restricted from bringing any EP messages, no matter, to the public. The thing is, SETI is looking for EP contact to come from some star system way out in the universe there somewhere.
Yeah, Rod was telling me, Wes, that you think that maybe these signals aren't coming from there at all, but
I don't think so. I think these came from inside our own solar system, you know, from the spaceship or from our moon. Well, you can't easily focus a radio telescope on a spacecraft transmitting messages while it's moving around at 1,000 miles an hour, you know. So, If SETI had to recognize that, they had been knocking the reality of UFOs, you know, for a very long time. And they don't want to look like fools, you know. They say, well, you know, this could have come from a alien spacecraft.
So basically, if I understand right, Wes and Rod, you're saying maybe both of these people are right. Greer says he has somebody inside SETI that told him that there are messages, and then the head astronomer there, he says there's no messages. And how could that be, that they're both right?
They could be both right. Yeah, as we can get back to the possibility that this could be a NASA thing, we tried to do what we could to run down this guy to say this was on.
Now this goes back to 75, right?
No, this would go back to 97.
Okay, 97, okay.
Yeah, I knew that these were real in 97, but we had a breakthrough in 2000 that allowed us to get a better handle on this, and we were... See, up until then, we didn't think that there was enough data that we could bring forth to verify, you know, prove our point. But in 2002, we did get breakthrough. And now what we're seeing are, you know, would have great meaning to a physicist, because we're getting answers that pertain to such things as the permittivity constant, the permeability constant of that the electricity and magnetism and free space. We're getting information that pertains to what is called the resistance in free space, such things as electron mass, electron charge to mass constant. Come on, this is not a game. And if it is, this guy who wrote it would have to be for a wreck. You know, we'd have to pray to this guy. And maybe he could solve the disease crisis or something. So there's no doubt, you know, that this is beyond anybody's ability.
Now, if I understand both of you right, the Ra Research Society believes, without any reservation or doubt, that there have been 9 messages received, right?
That's correct.
And these messages were received over a decade ago.
That's right. There's a good possibility that they were received, let's say, in 1993, somewhere around there. Maybe during the time of the eclipse in Mexico, I think that might have been around the time that eclipse took place in Mexico in 1993. They must have taken at least 2 years to try to crack the imprinted, you know, on how they were written, and they couldn't do it. I'd give 2 years. Then they resorted to putting them on the internet as a game to see if somebody out there might take a look at it and say, oh, I know how those are written. But that didn't happen either. And as I say, if it wasn't for the fact that we have, you know, rejected the so-called authorities, they said the pyramid was built by primitives, and we just said that we don't believe that. We started to investigate the pyramids, and that took a long time. That we were working on that since 1975, and we discovered the system. We saw how it applied to other ancient sites, and so here we are sitting with that knowledge, and then all of a sudden here comes these messages, and so we applied that knowledge to the messages, and lo and behold, it has unlocked. Now, no, I don't know if anybody else that would have, you know, could have done that. So We're trying to get the word out here because these messages were not intended for anybody to. It belongs to the world here. You know where we're coming from. We're doing our best we can, the best we can to see that the world, everybody, benefits from whatever these messages are.
Now, did I understand you that you don't have the first message completely decoded?
No, we're not. We're taking it section by section, and right now, section message one, section one, would be G B G. Next one is G B B G. Then three of the D, G B B B G. Now, you say, well, you see, I think that looks so. What does anybody do with that? But once you hang the raw numbers on the values, and you say, okay, in one case it's this, we're going to get the value of 54 to this, all the D's we're looking at, and then you compare the results of all three levels. What are we getting? We're getting things like the Artaba. We are getting things like what are called the first recitan. The fine structure constant for which is an amazing number that's used in physics every day.
Mm-hmm. Accompanying this program on our webpage here, we do have a PDF file in which you lay out the original message from 30 January 95, and you is much like you were just talking about, the GBG and G. BBG, GBB, BBG, and et cetera, et cetera. It goes on and on.
Once you put the raw value, numerical value, and take into account the accurate the duration of time that each tone is, and the difference in the pitch of the frequency, you get a heck of a lot of information. They have packed a lot of data. The extraterrestrials have packed a hell of a lot of data into GBBG. Now, as I say, as we have gone along, originally we thought there was only 5 formats. Now we're at up to 420. So we are learning as we go. And after it, we get it firmly understood, then we can get back to the messages and we get more out of
them. These messages, like the third one you mentioned in your PDF report, it's 12 minutes, 42 and a half seconds long.
I think I have it here.
Yeah.
Rolling around on.
So all the messages, you say that's the longest one, so all the messages are fairly long, I would.
The third message has over 1,500 tones in it. And.
Were these things designed so the first message would be easier to decipher than the second and the third?
I think so. From where we're at with it, I think so. By the time you get to the ninth message, we ought to know how to put the... What this is keeping is what we're looking for is possible medical information. You've got to be alert to that kind of thing. But right now, they're laying out basically certain things about the hydrogen atom. There is no doubt about that. They are establishing the raw values for certain constants, and then I heard I think it was Hoagland the other day. Oh, they would use EM, electromagnetic method. Well, who? That's ridiculous. Of course they will. They would. We don't have any other means to receive messages from them except through telepathy and those methods, which I know are valid. But the thing here is, they dumbed this down can understand it. And some of these guys know that we give a lot of credit for being intelligent because, you know, intelligent is not dumbing down enough for them. You know, so we're, you know, what does that tell you? You know, it tells me one thing, that if SETI did get these messages, they don't have anybody sitting around in the ivory hall there drinking coffee, waiting to interpret extraterrestrial messages. If they got messages, what in the world are they going to do with them? You know, they just don't have the means to interpret the messages.
Well, just talking about SETI again, how do you account for the two different stories here?
Well, I think what happened is that
I mean, it seems to me that Greer's...
I think that he knows of these messages.
It could be a ploy of disinformation.
Yeah, I think that he definitely knows of this information. If I was to, I would say that Dr. Greer is correct.
So in other words, the head of the astronomy section there at SETI, he lied.
Well, okay, there you go. Yes, you'd have to say so.
If you bring another fact in, too, back in 1997, Wes,
yeah.
Wasn't it then that Dr. Bruce Cornett, who was a while a deputy director of NIDS, for reasons unknown, he felt that he had to go to a certain spot in New York along the Hudson River.
Oh, you're right.
With a camcorder and a secretary, et cetera, and a UFO made several passes at him, and he contacted you. What happened after that?
Okay, here's the way that went. Bruce Cornett, was deputy director under Cole Kelleher of NIDS. And we know that NIDS was funded by Robert Zigelow. Okay. Cornett, after receiving that, looked over those things that you personally delivered to NIDS. Got a hold of me. He wanted to share his experience with photographing a UFO. I think, where was it? New Jersey or New York?
It was in New York, I think.
Right. And he, Dr. Cornett's been on your show, Jerry.
Yes, and we talked about that particular thing. The first time I ever had him on, he was talking about, they didn't give me the inside baseball story. He just gave me the story about seeing the UFOs.
Well, this is what that amounts to. Dr. Cornett said that the craft turned its belly up to it, and it had a white light on the right, a white light on the left, and in the center was a red light. Now, we refer to this now as the Cornett signal. You would have a red light, which would we know is the marker that more or less says begin. And the white light would flash, and then after, now the camcorder, of course, all camcorders run at 30 frames a second. And, but this was based upon, these messages are based upon 29 frames. And what we found is that these signals were not consistent. In other words, it wasn't like a strobe, you know, an airplane, you know, blink, 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 blink. No, this is blink. Red light would go, then you get a white light on the left, you wait so many frames that you get a white light on the right. So I got that information. He had those particular bit of information on his website. And you probably had that. His website. But anyway, what I took those and found that, in fact, those messages, those flashing lights that Dr. Cornett recorded were based on the Ross Implement mathematics. It was spelling out what we call a rod and the divisions of that rod, which is omega right one up. And so if here we have, the link directly to the messages. They are definitely trying to get us to accept and understand the raw system of mathematics so that they could give us information along those roads using that mathematical system. There's no doubt. Now, as soon as
That sounds to me like they're trying to tell us something, maybe about hydrogen.
That's correct. I'm absolutely sure of that, Jerry. Now, Dr. Cornett's verification, that's a record now. But as soon as he let me know about it, he was fired. Bigelow said, take a walk. And that was a sudden thing. And then again, the way that Nid, we thought that Nid would just say, oh, this is wonderful. Let us, get on the case here and let's get these things. No, that's not the way it turned out. The way I saw the organization, I don't mind saying it straight out, is Nid said that they had all of Robert Bigelow's money, and that if anybody came up with such a worthwhile investigation, he'd get behind it, and he would get to the bottom of it, and the person who started, putting them on the right track or something, would get, recognized and so forth. That's not the way they, that's not their, really not what happened. People were sending things to Nid. Yeah. Well, the first thing is they say, oh, we checked this out, and it proved to be nothing. And then they start a little method of intimidation, attempting to more or less say, well, if you continue to believe in this, then you're an idiot or you're a fool. And we have PhDs here, so we know what we're talking about. We just told you there's nothing to do with this. I also heard that it was said that if Bigelow had to spend $200 to check something out, more than $200, he wouldn't do it. Now, I got that from the horse's mouth, believe me. So it's just that all they were was just a way to gather information.
In this PDF file that we have attached, that people can go read, you lay out the tones, and you even mentioned the hertz cycles per second.
Well, what we got there, that's this 18-page thing. If that could also, be obtained. With the PDF on. They'll get the picture, everybody. It's like we did with the, the UFO file show that you and Larry did. I listened to that last night. Where you recommend that a person can look at the PDF on the finding of Flight 19,
I would recommend that people check out the story of Flight 19. It seems you have something there, Wes. It is pretty evident, really, that this missing plane could be sitting out there in space, quite a distance from Earth. Wes Bateman and Rod Davis will be right back for the second half of the show, so don't go away.
My Search for the Afterlife is a book that explores real communications between a father and his deceased son. Uniquely authored from beyond the grave and co-authored in this world, the book chronicles the miraculous journey of communication beyond death. Learn more about the book, My Search for the Afterlife. Visit their website at www.mysearchfortheafterlife.com. That's mysearchfortheafterlife.com.
Messages from outer space. SETI has them, or do they not have them? That is the question. Okay, I'm not Shakespeare, guys, so let's get back to the subject at hand. Wes Bateman, when we went to the break, we were discussing ET contact. And Rod Davis, I think you have a question for Wes on this subject, don't you?
Why would the extraterrestrials, with the knowledge that they have and the abilities that they have, why would they not land on a White House lawn and make all of this knowledge public instead of using a clandestine method like this of using the 9 ET messages and God knows how many others they've tried to send?
Well, I think you said it right there, God knows. This is what we've understood. I've been at investigating the UFO thing for 40 years, and people say, well, where in the world have you been? You know, why aren't you out there, telling us what you know? Well, I'm very glad for 40 years that I have been more or less in seclusion on this thing. I know there are people with abilities to telepathically communicate with extraterrestrials, and I make that claim myself. But there are more phonies out there than there are legitimate people. I'm persona non grata when it comes to a lot of people. I really do believe I'm on some blacklist, you know. I did get occasions, I think it was Congress. I appeared as one of the, what do they call that? It was a very large thing. The fellow that promoted it, that put it on yearly, was named Stonier. And his people, they said, if Bateman is going to be here, we won't show up. Why? It's because the data that we have studied tells us that ETs are not communicating with everybody. I put people in this category, you know, there's the real telepath, but there's also what I call the woo-woo channelers, false contactees, those that claim they're messiahs, or they are representatives of the extraterrestrials. Now, you know, how do you separate them? Where you say, I know I'm doing it. Well, they all claim that. And you can't possibly get any logic or figure out why these things are not going, why they're not landing on the White House lawn or whatever. You're never going to find that out as long as that, all that falsehood and baloney is going on out there. But what did we do? We pinned down the fact that there exists on the planet Earth a condition called the frequency barrier. In the very ancient past, the fifth planet of this system exploded and brought about a condition on the Earth that caused human life and animal life to devolve. Now, this ties in with what Michael Primo is saying in his writings, which are called Forbidden Archaeology and Human Evolution. In fact, I just received an email from Dr. Primo. If he read what we've got on the website there, he stressed the fact he is strongly interested in part 4. Now, what is this? And the other thing we want to make clear is that we all live in what is called a universal life field. it is all permeating what we would say omnipresent. Now, anything that's alive has a great deal to do with the universal life field. That includes the extraterrestrials. The problem is that anybody claims, you know, that somebody says, well, how do you get into the UFO business? I said, well, the first thing you do is you buy a cash register, and then you have a choice. There's a list of, you know, what the claims you are. You can claim yourself to be a messiah, and that's okay. And you know, it's that easy. And too many people pick up on it. And your easy way out is if somebody starts kicking you down on things, say, no, no, what the extraterrestrials are for the future. You know, and of course, you don't understand that. Well, people don't stop and realize that the person, you know, that's telling them that wouldn't understand such a thing either. Not for the future, a parallel universe. Well, what I'm saying is, now, we're dealing with real three-dimensional individuals. Our problems are physical problems. We had this frequency barrier condition on the Earth. We're only using 20% of our brain power. The extraterrestrials are using a great deal more of it. When we are able to use our full potential, we attain a state which is called cosmic consciousness, or the ability of infinite thought. It's the highest form of extrasensory perception. You see, to a man who is blind, those of us who can see have extrasensory perception. The ETs, you can take the universal life field, which we call the ULF or ULF, and divide it into four major parts. The part that we're quite familiar with is the molar level, where we use our five senses: hearing, seeing, smelling, tasting, feeling, by touching. Now, the brain is a molar level item, but the mind is not. It belongs to the next level up, called the micro level. Now, we use our this condition called the frequency barrier keeps us from using higher mental frequencies, because we can't use a great deal. See, we only use 20% of our brain. Now, the question is, evolution doesn't make sense there. We got this great brain, but we can't use it. But that's a good sign that we are not evolving at all. We are re-evolved. And the ETs have been, well, there's two types, you know, the negative and the positive come in. I heard on the show that, I think it was Larry Dickens brought up the Chupacabra. And he was right on the money. He said, well, this could be an ET thing. And, in my book, he's absolutely correct. The type of ETs is they don't have good intentions. They're using this unique condition that exists on the Earth called the frequency barrier to produce Shavira, which are the combined human with animal parts. And, all the horror stories you hear about going on at the Delphi base, well, they're not going on there now, but that the mixing and matching of animal and human tissue. And, we don't have enough time to get into why they're doing that, so that's why we got the Knowledge from the Stars articles there on Rod's website, and can get into it there. But there is definitely, we're dealing with real individuals, flesh and blood. There are two, they're at odds with each other. They're not afraid of any government. They don't have to make deals with any government. They're just doing their thing. And here's one other problem. The government is aware of the frequency barrier. For all they know, this condition is going to continue on for 1,000 years into the future. They know the ETs are going to keep looking at it. But what kind of world would we have? What kind of order? What kind of economics and so forth could we keep together if everybody knew they were living under this condition and the government can't do anything about it? That real reason for non-disclosure is they're going to go on as long as they can to protect the economic system and the religious structure we got here. Now, if they knew that the frequency barrier was going to disappear tomorrow, I'm sure the government could write out and tell everybody, hey, this is what's going on. But till then, it's a waste of time.
I've heard the ETs
have been coming here thousands of years. They observe earthquakes, volcanic eruptions, because the Earth is vibrating, producing that condition. But about 20,000 years ago, key strata layers in the planet slid back into their normal position, and the conditions have or weaken. We are definitely going, we're definitely in the final stages of the frequency barrier. It's been estimated that the barrier will disappear sometime between the year 2012 and 2018. And at that point, open physical contact with the ETs it'd be no problem. You see, they can't come into this condition unprotected. Otherwise, they're thrown off biologically. What's Sasquatch? Sasquatch is an experiment. They put down private emails into this condition in order to determine how this unnatural vibration coming from our planet's core is going to affect the development of the Sasquatch fetus. Why don't you find them? That's because before the baby comes to full term, they pick up the child and the mother. Why don't you? Okay, look at all the new species or species they thought had been extinct. They're finding the Kodiak. Extinct for 70 million years. They're pulling those fish in off the coast of Madagascar. They're finding what they call the Laotian rock rat disappeared from the only fossils that were found. And all of a sudden, there they are. They're coming back.
Well, what kind?
Tucker disappeared for 60 years. What they're doing is reintroducing these species.
So what happens in 2018 or 2019?
Well, you're going to find out that there is such a thing as the Federation. I tried to pass that same picture on to Roddenberry and Dean Koontz back before Star Trek was put in motion. And, they were believing it. And, They understood. What we're going for is what I say is going to be the great getting up morning. One day we're going to wake up and be able to use higher mental frequencies.
Is that are you saying one day we'll wake up and everybody will be very, very bright?
That's right. this is happening. We see this in the Indigo children. This is something to do with there's all kinds of the hybrids and things like that are not the kind of hybrids that the Grays would like to see occur, but the natural hybrid. You see, the monkeys, the gorillas, the orangutans, and so forth, they're really ETs. They were existing on the planet for whatever reason when the frequency barrier began. And these various species split from the re-evolutionary line. In other words, they came to a point biologically where they could not date with us, or we couldn't date with them. In fact, the chimpanzee is believed to have left the line about 6.5 million years ago. Up until that time, they would have been considered the same species as we are. Now, Neanderthal and so forth, the answers to that is that, okay, so they're we're all re-evolving. Now, what the other side, or the evil side, trying to do is find biological bridges in the frequency barrier that will explain why these extraterrestrial races did not continue to re-evolve. And they want to find biological bridges to produce Shavira. In other words, you know what that is. You know, you're going to end up with a guy with wings on his back or something. And you know, it's not as ridiculous as if you know, it was known what this actually means and what such a reality would, how such a reality would affect us as we said, affect the, you know, the extraterrestrials as well. It is really a diabolical thing. But it, you know, just to say it is not good enough. You've got to explain it, and we're trying to do that. And, but that's why it's so confusing. Nobody really knows what the extraterrestrials have been doing. And then you got the people that say, well, we're going to sit down with these guys, you know, a culture that's hundreds of millions of years old, and tell them how they got to deal with us. No way. That's a joke. Knowing what the ETs are all about, that's a joke. And they're not going to do that.
Are we talking about more than one group of ETs? I mean, some bad, some good? And that's a relative term, I guess.
Well, here's the way you look at it. You see, we you know, there's such a thing as space money.
I didn't know that.
Uh-huh. Yeah, there is. It's called life force. It can be measured, and you can put values of certain things on the life force. We spend our life force through emotion, anger, fear, worry, love. And anything somebody can do to get you to give your life force, you know, the UFOs is a great a mystery for a reason. See, realities can be manifested into this level of perception. People say, well, I can't believe in something unless it's real. Well, you can make it real if you believe in it. If there's enough of this life force put into it, you can make it so. And they're the representation of every reality in different levels of the universal life field. You know, I used the idea of the wheel, you know, because it first started out as a cross-section of a log with a hole in the middle. And then such a thing could be used too long over a brace of sand and rocks, and then they put metal tires, and they keep innovating. Now we're up to, you know, using bearings and so forth. Now those are realities, and those are improvements on a reality. If you understood one reality perfectly, you would join the consciousness of the Creator, because all is one. You understand one thing perfectly, or understand the whole universe. But we live in a dual universe. We have black and white, we have heat, cold, male and female, plus and negative. You know, it was Einstein that said, you know, they asked him to prove the existence of God and evil, and he said, well, cold is the absence of heat, light is the absence of darkness, and God is the absence of evil. And that, in a sense, is both things must exist, but you don't have to put your psychic energy to the negative end. You can if you want to. You can. There are those extraterrestrials that do. They are psychically vampiring that's the energy from us with the mystery. And in a sense, both sides are. The people that obtain the infinite thought have the ability of receiving what are called lights of divine direction. This is a long way about to answer Rob's question.
I was wondering when you were going to get there.
Yeah, to land on the White House lawn. Well, there are two things that keep them from doing it. One is the prime direction. And the other is what is called a light of divine direction. But let's say, okay, to explain that, it would be like saying, I intend to punch Rod in the nose, okay? And I would ask one of these re-perfected persons, if my action, would the universe approve of that? And I might get no light at all as a return. That would mean don't do it, because something somewhere in the universe that is trying to progress to the master plan of the Creator is going to be interfered with or making any progress. A gray light would mean that Rod's going to pick up a chair and whack me in the head. And what do we got there? My progress is not going to it's going to be impeded. A white light saying, go ahead and do anything you want. It's not going to interfere. That comes down right now. Should I shoot Rod? And the universe says, I don't care. Go ahead and do it. You know, that would be an answer from the universe. That would tell us that, or whoever I have that, you know, to do that, was not functioning in the master plan of the Creator. These guys are at war with each other out there. They could even go right past each other's ways. But those that are trying to follow the master plan do not take action unless they have a light of divine direction. If they ask to land on the White House lawn, obviously they have been getting no light to do so. All right? So, and why do they contact this person and not that person? Because of a light of divine direction. Now, all of these so-called abductions, think about it. I think I heard you say, Jerry, 8 million people abducted?
If you carry forth the figures, that's what it looks like to me.
Wouldn't that be amazing? Do you realize that requires 16 million sorties with spacecraft? The sky would be black with craft coming and going and kidnapping and abducting. But is that still? Yeah, it's happening, Jerry. Now, how could that be? How could all of these things be true? And, well, got somebody at the abduction. There's no doubt about it. But they have they're technically advanced. We've got television. We can record information on little cylinders like Edison did. Then it was wired. Then it was videotaped. Now we got CDs and all of that. Well, where is that technology going? Another thing that I heard you and Larry talking about was holographs. Oh, yeah. They have holographs. The holographic thing seems to be more of the guys on the right side of the wheel. They're using things like the holographs, things like that.
When you say the right side of the wheel, what do you mean?
These are the people that would work within the master plan of the Creator. They are not really trying to rip us off for our psychic energy. They were dealing with, they're not in the business to do that. You would call that the Federation. And there are hundreds and millions of individuals that are aligned with that Federation. Somebody says, well, 80 or so people. Well, sure, they might have seen that particular type of species, but there's really billions. Millions of people.
And now in my defense, when we talked about, that's an opening for the show about the abductions, and that's from a survey of certain people, a certain percentage of people in the survey said that they were abducted, and if you carried that forward to the population, then it would be that many people. That's all, that's basically, I didn't really say that as fact. I mean, that's just what a survey is saying. What are you saying these abductions are about?
Right. Well, here's what that is. Did you notice that everybody ends up back in their car or back in their bed? What they're doing is that ET technology has advanced to the point that they can record any experience, the feeling, the emotion, and everything of a real experience, and then they can play that back. And why would they do that? They do that because it's small change for them to affect an individual. But if that individual, wakes up in their bed the next day and says, gee, I had that experience, which, believe me, they really, really, really happened, and they're going to go out and tell 1,000 people, that they're going to produce emotional reaction in the people that they tell. And that energy, emotional energy, goes to the people that caused that event to happen. And a lot of people come back and they got marks on them. Well, there's a condition called somnambulism, which is the deepest form of hypnosis. If you or I or anybody was in that state of hypnosis, and the hypnotist told us that we burned our finger, you're going to raise a blister, just like you were burned, even though you weren't. So, we are, most of the abductions, the people are really experiencing them, but they're receiving a program that is transmitted through the universal life. And that's why there's so many of them. See, we're getting more and more sensitive to such kinds of psychic input. And, you put a couple of bug-eyed guys in there, which are real. The grays are not subjected to the conditions of the frequency barrier. They were genetically engineered to function in this condition. But the real guys behind the scenes are very seldom seen. The Nordics, and they're tall. They're up to 7-8 feet tall. And all those civilizations are hundreds of millions of years old. And they are, the thing that they're living their life for and trying to counteract are the manifestations of realities such as Shemira. And if you look at the ancient Egyptian gods, you know, they were all, you know, bird-headed. Well, that was to insert, you know, the idea of Shemira into our culture. Mixing turkeys with cats is not their interest. What they are after is the absolute production of the human and animal chimera.
Now, you've alluded several times to the Creator, and on your PDF file that's attached to the show, you close out with Luke 12:2, "For there is nothing covered that shall not be revealed, neither hidden that shall not be known." Why do you think there's a Creator?
The Creator of all that is.
Yeah, why? Why would that have to be?
Okay, let me try to put that. Well, the first thing is that, unless you say, well, ETs are lying. See, I've had 40 years of experience in that way. We work with a principle called copy and cancel telepathy. And copy and cancel telepathy, you have to have a reference. That's why we can discard a lot of people that say, okay, they're saying they have contact, but they don't. We're just not going to take this thing happening. And when I say we, I talk about my wife and I, who, my wife being gone now for some 15 years. If it wasn't for her, I couldn't have done what we did. But we learned that there was, we didn't just say, okay, it's happening. We wanted to know how it was happening and why it was happening. Why us? Okay? Now, we did make an attempt, we run on television programs and predicted UFO sightings and earthquakes with Belli, as I say. Some of our, part of what we knew of went into Star Trek with Gene Roddenberry and Coon. Of course, they took license and they changed things, but some of it did get out through that way. Now, this has been a 40-year daily type of thing. We have lived with the experience of life and divine direction. By saying, should we do this? And see, this 31 years ago, they said, you study the pyramid. Okay, you do it. Okay. Well, I said, well, all right, a few months window, all there is to know about this. Well, that's not the way it is. But we needed those references in order to understand certain things. Now, we have seen the miracles of light to the right direction. These are personal experiences. For other people to have them, it's just not like a psychic experience. They have explained to us as a means to meet our demands by telling us why it's being done this way and why so it comes to the point that they say that the universal life field, there's such a thing as the creator of all that is. And they explained it very, clearly, at least to us. Okay, we've accepted that is the point. When whether or not somebody else accepts it, you know, that.
Well, I'm not saying I don't accept it. I'm just asking the question. I mean, it seems to me that all of these things, from religion to spiritualism to many things, they all seem to be centered on one thing, a creator.
Well, if you accept the creator, you have to accept the air pie of part of that. You don't put energy into it. It's just like what I said Einstein said. Cold is the essence of heat.
Well, I do believe Einstein was probably correct, at least semantically. I'm not sure that communications can actually express these things. And I do think that's one thing about your work. When you're using mathematics, regardless of what symbol of mathematics you're using, here again, mathematics, I'm not nearly the master of it that you are, but it seems to me that it's another way of using semantics, only you're using numbers.
Okay, now I'm glad you brought me around to that, because I think the best way to explain this is intelligent design. Look at this mathematics system, the RAW system, definitely supports intelligent design. The Roth system tells us that the electron weighs a certain amount, and that the proton weighs a certain amount. Now, if you look at those values in what we call the NPS system, there's no harmony, mathematical harmony between those values that are assigned to those particular particles. But in the Roth system, they are. This shows the intelligent design, but the language, this mathematical language, is the language that describes all things. It describes now. There's no way. This is not arbitrary. This is something that is. You can't change it. You couldn't. Change the RAW system in any way. So
basically, our conversation tonight, I get that we tied ancient Egyptian system of RAW, the pyramids, in other words, and extraterrestrials, and then the crop circles created by extraterrestrials, they all are intertwined somehow.
And as I say, I am building, you know, you just, you know, what I say the good guys are doing, I'm hesitant to put that in. I have taken, for instance, those nine messages, those nine articles Rod and I have put on his site. You know, and I have said, gee, I can tell you what the bad guys are doing here. I've brought it to that point. But knowing that if I start laying out what the good guys are doing and why they're doing it, it's really going to raise a stink, you know. Because if some of it is going to fly in the face of certain people's religious beliefs. I'm not saying spiritual beliefs, because I think that anybody that lives with this thing long enough absorbs the fact that it's true. A lot of times I can talk about things and people say, you know, Wes, I know this. I don't know why I know it.
Mm-hmm.
But I do. And the reason they do is because it's in all of us. And all that this information that we're talking about is doing is bringing it to the forefront of their consciousness, you know, and they say, gee, that feels good to know this. It relieves, it answers questions they didn't even know they had. So it's just such a pleasure to me to have you, you know, patiently listen to the, you know, I'm telling you what I'm telling you, because it's a driving force to get did me to get this information out there. And, but the people don't know what the world we're talking about. And, you know, I don't want to just simply say, hey, West Dayton is saying so, and therefore it's so. No, no, I want to be challenged. This information proves itself, and it answers that the Creator exists.
I think you're saying that we may have it all wrong when we're talking about 2012 or 2018 being the end. It may be the beginning.
It'll be the beginning. See, the frequency barrier is a product of key stratolayers within the planet being cracked. And at its worst time, here was devolved. And then we re-evolved. Then around 20,000 years ago, see, we've had a period where the barrier did not affect life on the Earth that badly. And we had golden ages. This is why we find gold chain and troughs millions of years old.
So we may be headed for a golden age pretty quickly.
Well, we're already in it, but we are in the end. The reason why is a key stratolayer slipped into its original natural position around 20,000 years ago. And, see, most golden ages last for around 25,000. And in some cases, civilizations like the one that was in the Indus Valley, there was a golden age, but they started to use atomic weapons. And in so doing, fired up the frequency barrier condition, and de-evolution, we went backwards again. That's why you had UFOs around places. We were testing our nuclear missiles in the 1940s. They know that we could make things worse with them, not by killing each other, but by causing disruptions within the internal structure of the planet. That the nuclear bombs, earthquakes, volcanic eruptions, they produce what are called push and shear waves. And you can always tell where you're going to get UFO sightings.
Yeah, you and I discussed that a previous taping that we're going to get into in great detail in September. And it's actually a formula there.
It's easy. We've had 23 prearranged UFO sightings with high-ranking military personnel standing right next to it. We are taking films. They are taking films. In fact, they came to us for protection because the desert bats, for instance, would attack them, and they realized that we had found a solution for keeping the bats away from us. You know, so 23, you know, they're humans like we are. All of our information in the 60s was sent to the Congress Committee, and they told us that they lost all of our pictures and so forth. But we're that, present day, we are getting pictures like you can't believe.
Yeah, that's true. Rod, you've been silent there. We're about ready to wrap up the show. You got any comments or questions?
That's all right. No, the questions I had, I asked.
Did I answer it?
Yes, you finally got it.
See, the whole problem is you want the people to have the references. See, in the nine articles we got there, that's just a shell. You know, like tomorrow you would hear of, dog-like creature down in Texas, you know, that some fellow shot one. Then when a couple hours later he touches it, and it turns to powder, okay? Well, that's a ET experiment in the frequency barrier. Do you understand? You can put that thing right in its proper slot in that framework that we tried to set up for ground sites. There's sightings over Michigan. Well, we can tell you exactly why. There's some volcano over there in the Philippines that's going off. They're reading push and shear waves. It's easy to put these things into their right first sentence.
Well,
everybody wants to hear it.
We're going to try our best to present it in a interesting way coming up next month, and the series will continue. That tonight it's about up. Rod, I always enjoy talking to Wes, but we got to teach him about sound bites.
I know that. I greatly, you know, but that's why I told Rod to be quiet. I need every sound bite I can get.
I've enjoyed it, guys.
Well, Jerry, thank you so much. This is so important. And the main thing is that people are putting their psychic energy into things that are not true. And you know what? That energy is hanging up in the universal life field. It's either going to go to the good guys or the bad guys eventually. And, you know, that's the engine. That's the fuel that runs the EP engine. You've got to know that. And you've got to know where we're hurting ourselves and where we can... do the things that's going to benefit us all.
So emotional vampires.
That's it. And that's exactly what's happening to us. As long as this mystery is in the state it is, we're losing psychic energy. Or what we call the charge force. And that's a complete subject in itself.
Well, maybe we'll do another show about that sooner or later. I'll be back out in your part of the woods. Well, there's no woods there, but I'll be out there. I'll be back out there in your part of the desert later this year, and we'll be seeing you.
God bless, Jerry. Thank you.
Okay, thank you both.
Rod, thank you. Thank you.
Thank you, Jerry. I enjoyed again.
Okay, and once again, they can go to your website and... read all this information, plus we have lots of things as well. Thank you very much, guys.
My Search for the Afterlife is a book that explores real communications between a father and his deceased son. A rare number theory is developed during Dennis Spaulding's quest. My Search for the Afterlife is a book that shares a theory believed to help his son and other spirits validate the messages they sent across worlds. To learn more about this unique and moving book, visit their website at mysearchfortheafterlife.com. That's mysearchfortheafterlife.com.